Tonight, Trump's victory lap as the president-elect celebrates saving jobs at Carrier. We now know the cost paid to keep them. And tonight, the campaign's over, but the rallies are not. Without a trace, family members missing in those devastating wildfires scorching the Smoky Mountains. Why searchers now fear they may never be found. Hostage crisis, nearly a dozen held inside a Florida bank. Tonight, the dramatic moment they distracted the gunman, allowing the SWAT team to storm inside. High-risk rescue mission to save legendary astronaut Buzz Aldrin falling ill at the South Pole, a medical emergency at the bottom of the world. And magic mushrooms. Wait till you see how they're helping cancer patients feel better. Some say it's changed their lives. Nightly News begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. The campaign is over, but Donald Trump was back on the trail today, this time to run a victory lap and celebrate an early success in his pledge to keep American jobs from leaving the country. In his first public event since the election, Mr. Trump appeared at the Carrier plant in Indianapolis to trumpet a deal to keep over 1,000 jobs previously earmarked to leave the country in the U.S. The deal is raising high expectations as well as some eyebrows over whether what worked with Carrier can reverse a decades-long tide of vanishing manufacturing jobs. NBC's Kristen Welker has details.
President-elect Donald Trump taking a victory lap in Indiana.
Hi, everybody.
Touting a deal to save more than 1,000 jobs at Carrier from getting shipped to Mexico.
I said companies are not going to leave the United States anymore without consequences. Not going to happen.
The deal gives the heating and air conditioning company $7 million in state tax breaks over 10 years in exchange for Carrier investing $16 million into its plant. But another 1,300 jobs are still slated to go to Mexico. Sources familiar with the negotiation say one motivating factor, Carrier's parent company, United Technologies, has billions of dollars in contracts with the government. Trump, for the first time, pointing to a story he apparently saw on Nightly News.
They were doing a story on Carrier. And I say, wow, that's something. I want to see that.
In this story, T.J. Bray delivered this strong message to the president-elect.
We want you to do what you said you're going to do. We're going to hold you accountable.
Trump today said he was using Carrier as a euphemism on the trail, acknowledging he thought it was too late to intervene.
At first I said, I wonder if he's being sarcastic, because this ship has sailed. And then I said, it was 6:30 in the evening, and I said, boy, the first thing I'm going to do is go there.
Many Carrier workers relieved.
Christmas miracles, if they actually happen, we got one today.
But just a mile down the road at Rexnord Manufacturing, workers wondering if Mr. Trump can save their jobs too.
Do for us what you've done for Carrier.
John Feltner is one of about 300 workers at this ball bearing plant whose job is moving to Mexico. He's a father with two children in college.
I know they say something about the Trump train. I don't know what kind of train it is, but don't let it stop a Carrier. Keep on rolling. Let's get them all back.
Since 2000, the U.S. has lost nearly 5 million manufacturing jobs, some shipped overseas, others lost to automation. Experts say Carrier is a good first step, but much more is needed.
So clearly, the president's not going to get involved individually in every one of these things, but I think we can expect in the Trump administration a more active federal role in these sorts of cases.
Mr. Trump is holding a rally here in Cincinnati, Ohio tonight. It's aimed at being reminiscent of a campaign-style event, although as of right now, the crowd size is considerably smaller. But this is the kickoff to a thank-you tour. Mr. Trump poised to crisscross the country, thanking his supporters for helping him win the White House. Lester.
Kristen Walker, thank you. Let's turn now to the deadly 1-2 punch from the violent storms and massive wildfires we've seen this week in the Southeast. Dozens of tornadoes carved a trail of destruction through seven states, while the death toll from the fires has now climbed to 10, and many others are still missing, leaving anguished loved ones desperately waiting for word. NBC's Kerry Sanders brings us the latest.
A flare-up just before sunrise in Gatlinburg this morning, put out by firefighters within 2 hours. With the downtown and this tourist-dependent community spared but still evacuated, high anxiety because a single ember could ignite what remains. The firestorm this week here burned so hot, officials say the bodies of the missing may never be found. John and Janet Summers from Memphis were in Gatlinburg on vacation. No one has heard from them since. Their three sons alive, but in the Vanderbilt burn unit tonight.
Looking for my wife.
Michael Reed among those waiting 3 days now for authorities to tell him where his wife and two daughters are. Police Chief Russell Brackens.
What is it like for you because you have the families reaching out to you wanting answers?
It's one of the most difficult things you can imagine.
Among the 10 confirmed dead, 70-year-old Alice Hagler. Her son James says at least he has an answer.
My mom was a grandmother of two. My mother was my best friend, someone who cared about everyone, never met a stranger.
With more than 400 firefighters working 12-hour shifts, exhaustion. This photo on Facebook captioned, as close as we got to seeing sleep in 36 hours. The cleanup here in the Smokies is only just beginning, and today cleanup of a different sort across the South. Tornado damage. 34 twisters across 7 states, leaving 5 dead. In Alabama, a tornado with wind speeds of up to 127 miles an hour leveled the town of Rosalie. Tonight, after 3 days of Mother Nature's fury, the forecast is finally for calm.
Tonight here in the Smokies, as many as 8 people are still unaccounted for. Family members wondering if they'll ever find their loved ones, especially if they ran into the woods in a panic. Lester?
All right. Carrie Sanders. Carrie, thank you. It's turned out of the hostage drama that played out for hours this morning in Florida. A gunman holding nearly a dozen people inside a bank, quickly surrounded by a SWAT team, as well as worried family members. NBC's Jacob Rascone has details on a harrowing day.
They were hostages, now survivors.
And it was scary. I thought it was a dream, but it was so real. It was real.
It was around 9 o'clock at the Community First Credit Union when the alleged gunman, 23-year-old Nicholas Daquan Humphrey, walked into the bank with a dog and a handgun and demanded money.
But when he shot up in the air, then I knew that he meant business.
Initial reports indicated someone had been shot.
All units responding to District 24 gunshot wound.
That turned out not to be true, but Humphrey told negotiators that he would start shooting if his demands were not met.
That he was actually putting the gun to the back of the hostage's head at a couple points.
Latarsha's son, DeAndre, one of the bank tellers inside.
I haven't heard anything from him.
After about an hour and a half, negotiators convinced the gunman to free 2 hostages. Minutes later, 2 other people hiding inside the bank, unknown to the gunman, made a daring escape.
And at that point, the SWAT team took that opportunity to make entry into the bank.
They used a tank-like battering ram to breach the building, putting themselves between the suspect and the hostages. Surrounded, Humphrey surrendered. Family overjoyed as the hostages, shaken but unhurt, were freed at last.
So she's okay.
She okay. Thank you, Lord. Thank you.
A reversal of fortune. The hostage taker, now a prisoner. Jacob Rascone, NBC News.
There is a developing story we're following tonight from New Orleans. Former NFL player Joe McKnight has been killed in a shooting incident with another driver, a possible victim of road rage. The suspect was arrested at the scene. McKnight played for USC in college and then the New York Jets in the pros. He most recently played in the Canadian Football League. Now to a dramatic medical emergency involving an American hero. Buzz Aldrin, who landed on the moon with Neil Armstrong in 1969, had just arrived at the South Pole as part of a private tour group. But once there, his condition quickly deteriorated, triggering a high-risk rescue mission. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
In a hospital bed in New Zealand tonight, a smiling 86-year-old Buzz Aldrin after a rescue from the bottom of the world. Just Tuesday, he tweeted, "South Pole, here I come," as he joined a luxury adventure tour. But once there, at 9,000 feet, nearly double the altitude of Denver, his condition deteriorated. A C-130 on skis like this one landed to medevac Aldrin to a U.S. research station, then onto New Zealand, where he's described tonight as stable with fluid in his lungs but responding well to antibiotics. ER Dr. John Torres has flown 2 rescue missions to the South Pole himself.
It looks like high-altitude pulmonary edema, which is a buildup of fluid in the lungs that happens at high altitude. If that happens, you have to get them down to sea level quickly. You have to get them on oxygen quickly. It's a life-threatening condition.
Beautiful view.
In 1969, Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon in Apollo 11, following Neil Armstrong down the ladder to the lunar surface.
We were given a fantastic opportunity to do what other people have just not had come along in their life.
For decades, Aldrin has pushed for more manned missions.
To infinity and beyond!
The animated character Buzz Lightyear from Toy Story, created in his honor.
I would say that Buzz Aldrin's spirit is pretty irrepressible. He is a force. There's no question about that.
Tonight, NASA says it's been in touch with the New Zealand doctors and believes Aldrin is doing well. An American explorer still looking for adventure. Tom Costello, NBC News, Miami.
Now to new developments in that deadly plane disaster in Colombia. La Mia Airline, which operated that doomed chartered flight, has now had its license indefinitely suspended. And this evening, we're bringing you new images as we go inside the crash scene with NBC's Keir Simmons.
This is where 71 people died, almost an entire Brazilian soccer team wiped out. The plane appears to have clipped the top of this hill and just ripped apart. That's the wing that has turned back on itself. And such was the force of the impact that way down there, that's the front landing gear. There's no sign of a fire, strengthening the theory that the aircraft ran out of fuel. Locals say it was just 4 minutes from the airport. The Colombian police escorted us closer to the wreckage. Investigators are picking through the twisted fuselage. Beneath it there, one of the engines still intact. All clues to what happened. One of the victims, co-pilot Cici Arias, talked about her excitement for the team hours before the flight. Her brother wrote this tribute on Facebook. Dear sister, I'm going to miss you for the rest of my life. One local who helped rescue the six survivors told us he found a cell phone with multiple missed calls. So many have been left grieving by this tragedy. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Colombia.
Now to the battle raging against ISIS. As U.S.-backed forces push deeper into Mosul to drive out ISIS, more civilians are getting caught in the middle. And the only medical care available for many of them on the front lines is being provided by two American volunteers on a mission to save lives. We get their story tonight from our Richard Engel inside Iraq.
This is probably the most important clinic in all of Iraq now, because almost every civilian injured in Mosul is taken here. And they're treated by Derek Coleman from San Diego.
Yeah, I got the artery. Yeah.
And Pete Reed from New Jersey.
It's the very first day we were here, we had over 65 casualties, including 12 dead on arrival.
The Americans are the first ones to give care to civilians like Farida. Shrapnel tore into her legs moments ago. Her brother says ISIS is firing indiscriminately into Mosul. The two 27-year-olds came here on their own.
Quit my job, sold my truck. He sold most of my possessions, came out here and on a hope and a dream. And
the volunteers initially came to work with Iraqi forces to help fight ISIS, but they realized they could do more good, saving lives.
How many frontline medical posts like this are there in Mosul right now? One.
You're standing in it.
There are 5,000 American troops here, but very few of them are allowed to leave their bases and help out on the front lines. So Reed and Coleman stepped in.
Where are you getting these supplies?
We've had various generous donations from private individuals, small organizations, and we've been able to make it work.
The shoulder?
Coleman, a machinist, only has basic first aid training. Reed has more. He's a former Marine who served two tours in Afghanistan.
I sold some fight left in me. I could use my medical for good.
Yeah, bandage, quick. Here.
They say they've treated more than 500 people, but they have no doubt which ones they'll remember here? Forever.
Kids, hands down. Kids.
Yeah, dealing with children, wounded children, dying children. We've had some days with half a dozen kids die.
Take cover, take cover.
They've had some close calls.
It's a full retreat.
Like when they were chased by an ISIS car bomb. But the injured people of Mosul are depending on them.
And I have every intention of staying here until the battle here is over.
Richard Engel, NBC News, Mosul, Iraq.
There's a lot more ahead for us tonight. New hope for cancer patients from an unlikely and illegal source. The trippy drug that many say is giving them a new lease on life. Also, it's just around the corner, the best time to book your holiday travel. We'll tell you about it when we come back. We're back now with what you might call an unconventional way that has helped some cancer patients feel better. Psychedelic medicine, you might say, in the form of magic mushrooms. And doctors say for some, they're working, well, magic. Let's get more from NBC's Kristen Dahlgren.
When you think magic mushrooms, chances are something like this comes to mind. But you may soon think of this, a medication. Two small but encouraging studies out today show the hallucinogenic ingredient in some mushrooms, called psilocybin, reduced anxiety and depression in 80% of cancer patients for more than 6 months after receiving just one dose.
So you've been through a lot, though, in your life.
Gail Cowan was in her fourth bout with breast cancer.
You know, I was really feeling sorry for myself and feeling very stressed.
After extensive psychological testing, she was given a pill and watched closely by doctors as she listened to music and went on a vivid mind trip.
It's beautiful. It's, you know, it's something you want to embrace.
Cowan took the drug 2 years ago and still...
This. Like every night when I get in bed, I find that I have this smile on my face.
It's that long-term effect that has doctors hoping for more studies conducted under tight DEA regulation and medical supervision.
People should not look at this research and data and extrapolate from that. They can go get mushrooms illicitly, try it, and think it's going to help them.
But researchers are now encouraged by the potential of psychedelics to treat things like alcoholism, smoking, and depression. Just this week, the FDA approved a large-scale trial using the illegal party drug ecstasy for PTSD. Once criminal compounds getting a second look and giving some, like Gail Cowan, a second chance.
I think it's wonderful.
Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
We're back in a moment with the first family taking part in a White House holiday tradition for the last time. A surprise announcement tonight from one of the most high-profile business leaders in America. Starbucks chairman and CEO Howard Schultz says he'll step down as the company's chief executive in April. He'll become executive chairman, and the Starbucks president will take over as CEO. Schultz has been with the company since 1982. Do you still need to book your holiday travel tickets? Well, you might want to wait a few more days. If you buy this week, you can save a little over 2% on your tickets, according to a report. But if you wait until next week, the savings can jump to nearly 5%. And lights, camera, Christmas at the White House. The Obama family on hand to flip the switch tonight for their last Christmas at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. President Calvin Coolidge began the tree lighting tradition in 1923. And here in New York, right outside, we've got quite a tree of our own. The Today Show gang gathering to light the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree last night. A jam-packed crowd, not letting a little rain, actually a lot of rain, dampen the celebration. When we come back, why hundreds turned out to honor an American veteran when they'd never met before. Finally, tonight, the enormous emotional outpouring for a U.S. Navy veteran who had fallen on tough times. He was homeless and hadn't been in touch with his family in years. Yet our Harry Smith explains this week, hundreds of strangers who'd never even met him came from miles away to honor him and his service.
There was a funeral Tuesday morning near Casper, Wyoming. By the looks of it, it was for someone important. People, especially veterans, came from across the state to pay their respects to a man they did not know. Stephen Ryman, a homeless man who served in the Navy during Vietnam, died in a local hospital 2 weeks before. Locals didn't know him, so the coroner asked for help in finding his loved ones. And as word spread, so did the notion that his service to his country should be honored, respected.
It's our honor for those of us still here to do this for the vets.
Ryman's sister was finally located. She and her brother had been out of touch for several years.
I never, ever expected a turnout like this.
Earlier this year, people in Kansas paid homage to a homeless vet named Eton Gilmore, awarded a Purple Heart in Vietnam. In the spring, another homeless veteran named Serena Vine was buried with honor in Virginia. On any given night, tens of thousands, perhaps as many as 40,000 American veterans, wander our streets in search of shelter. Men and women who come home from the service but for reasons difficult and sometimes indiscernible can't reconnect with civilian life. The chapel at the State Veterans Cemetery near Casper was filled to overflowing for Stephen Ryman's funeral. His death is a reminder of all the other homeless veterans. And while they have done their duty, our duty to them remains unfulfilled. Harry Smith, NBC News.
And that will do it for us on a Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.